Hey, John.
Yeah, Alex.
You know what I hate?
What do you hate?
I hate the dirty Mangalores for killing the Mondo Shawan. Those bastards! They were just trying to deliver the fifth element safely to Earth!
I hate this movie so much.
You have no idea how excited I am to talk about this. I love this movie. My love for it has been reaffirmed. I've watched it 3 times since we decided to do this.
Good. Oh,
To be
God.
fair, one of which was with Riff Trax on, just because I wanted to see if he had anything funny to say.
Oh, yeah. I've been meaning to. I actually thought about just watching it that way. But
The Riff Trax isn't good. It's one of the very early Riff Trax where it's mic only.
It's just mic,
and
yeah.
I just think one person riffing is difficult to sit through.
Agreed. So is The Fifth Element.
No.
Boom.
Incorrect.
Boom.
Incorrect. Wonderful film. So we watched The Fifth Element. What would be funnier? Do you want to try to recap the film?
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you...
What, in a series of fart noises?
Yeah. Why don't you just put your hand up in that armpit region and start making some squeaks?
So the plot of The Fifth Element is there's a ball of evil that shows up when these three planets have an eclipse, and for some reason it needs to destroy Earth because it's evil.
Yeah.
I don't know, all life or just life on Earth?
I think it's supposed to be all life.
Okay. The only way to stop it is with five elements, and it happens every 5,000 years,
mm-hmm.
and the 5,000 years happens in a very annoying future where a perfect being, which we can get into that, but a perfect being finds Bruce Willis, and mm-hmm. then Bruce Willis is responsible for helping to shepherd it to its ultimate mission to stop the giant cosmic ball of evil and save the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just about
that's
right.
Largely it.
Yeah, and I'm still not seeing a problem yet.
Yeah.
This is where I'm lost.
Well, no, like, from a distance, this looks like a fine movie.
What's interesting is because from the distance that I watched it, about 3 feet, it's a fucking perfect movie.
Yeah.
All right, so last episode, I predicted. I said that I was going to find the Egyptian stuff boring, which is my memory of the film,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm going to like the rest of the stuff. No, we'll recall with my mistake with the Alien movie, wherein I picked the wrong movie, and then turns out I hated the whole thing. I was wrong about this one as well, but in a very different way. The Egyptian stuff was fucking gold.
Oh, boy.
Gold, I tell you. Great line from the archaeologist. Are you German?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
when Mondo Shawan to show up?
Yeah,
wonderful.
Because I, too, thought all the comedy from episode one of Star Wars was hilarious.
Well,
that is the same barometer of comedy as this movie. Like, it is
one,
awful.
Episode one stole from this.
I don't doubt it. Yeah. That's not something you should be proud of.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that part.
Yeah.
But either way, I delightful film. That beginning part, great. Luke Perry, here's my first note for the entirety of The Fifth Element. Luke Perry with above the title billing. Good job.
Oh, yeah.
Luke Perry above the title billing shows up for 2.5 minutes screen time, I'd say.
Yeah, well, that's like Twin Peaks Firework with me, with Twin Peaks just starting up again. I started rewatching that. And yeah, all like the first names are like David Bowie, who's in the movie for 30 seconds. But Luke Perry, hot box office draw, Luke Perry.
And I gotta tell you, speaking of hot, Luke Perry, that's a handsome son of a bitch.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You kind of forget, like, you know, because 90s heartthrob, you're expecting to be like, I don't know, it's kind of 90s hot. That's a fucking handsome fella.
I was always more Dylan than Brandon. Brandon would just, and I mean, don't even Steve, who gives a crap? Ian Ziering, like, whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he finally found his footing when he got into the Sharknado business.
Thank God for that.
Well, I think I just found an idea for later movies in the series.
Nope.
Yep.
You would be wrong.
Frankly, I'm not even kidding. So I watched The Egyptian stuff, and I am wrapped. I mm-hmm. love this movie. And the note I kept taking, and this is not necessarily out of order, but a note I keep making is, every single choice in this movie is opposite of what one would expect. So for the example I bring...
Yes, you would expect something to be good.
No,
and they make
no, but that's the thing. Great, let's just make another boring sci-fi movie. I mean, they just made truly unique, weird decisions. And I honestly like it for it. So like, who's going to be the president of the Earth?
Yeah, okay.
Tiny Lister.
Yeah.
No, but he plays it subtle. No, there's no boing, his eyes crossing and falling.
Really?
He played, no, not really.
George, like when they see the, they're doing it at the end. And it's at like, the,
no, boom! I was about to say, the very end, there was some slapstick from him, but the whole front of the movie is just him speaking in a deep voice, yeah, being a president.
That's so, only because everything else is bonkers and ridiculous and over the top.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I love about this movie is they go, oh, what should we do? We'll hire an over-the-top, weirdo, bad actor to be the president. How are we going to make him act? Stoic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Every choice is just bananas on this fundamental level, and I love it. You can't expect what's going to happen next in the film. Like, even if you know what's going to happen next, there's no way you'd predict its method that it chose to approach it.
Yeah. Okay. I guess what you see, what I see is a bug, you see is a feature.
Okay. So, when do you start to get annoyed? So let's start with the Egyptian stuff here.
Okay, the Egyptian stuff, yeah, already is not great. So it starts out kind of interesting when the guy basically just lays out the plot of what's happening.
Yeah.
And then the giant aliens waddle down. It starts to lose me almost immediately where they have to leave immediately and they leave that guy behind for some reason.
Oh, the guy that gets his hand crushed?
That gets his hand crushed, like that gives him the key to unlock, just re-unlock the door, you know. Hey, let me back out. That doesn't happen because don't worry about it. We got to go. We got to get out of here. The stones aren't safe. And they leave. I like their design. I don't understand how that becomes Milla Jovovich.
Yeah. So there's two things in this movie that I'm confused by and I maybe think is a flaw, but I'm not sure. The Milla Jovovich thing is, I have a theory on it, but let's not even get there yet.
All right. Before we get into any of it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to nip something in the bud right now. You need to just turn off your brain and have fun. And yes, that's true. But I was not having fun, so I could not turn off my brain. Oh,
it's so fun.
The best way I can describe it is the first time you're in Bruce Willis's apartment and everything is happening all at once. And it is loud and obnoxious. Yeah. That is the entirety of The Fifth Element.
Okay.
It's so big and shrill and irritating.
Now, let me respond by the point, and very close to where you're talking about, where I actually said out loud, I fucking love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
A guy tries to rob him by putting picture of the hallway on his hat, which is, no, that's brilliant. No,
that is brilliant. But the way that scene plays out is so annoying. It's like,
and then he starts to dance for no reason. God. It's amazing.
Damn it.
It's amazing.
How is that amazing?
He just makes a weird noise and starts hammer dancing.
Because this movie this movie is an early anime dub where they're like, well, we can't have science on the screen. We have to go.
Fine.
Because everything has to make noise, and it's
a man in a hallway with futuristic hammer pads with a picture of the hallway on his head, breakdancing for no reason. It's so great. I said out loud, I fucking love this movie while watching it. That made me that pure joy, pure joy. This movie. All right, so we leave Egypt. Go 300 years in the future, 350 years in the future, depending on what kind of math you're good at doing, because the math is not correct. And we're introduced to our hero, Corbin Dallas. Two notes on him. One, maybe I was just in a bit of a gender fluidity, was going a little bit more towards guys when I was watching this, but Bruce Willis is a handsome motherfucker in this movie.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Jesus. Like,
well, everything anyone wears in this movie is skin tight.
Yeah. And you kind of forget, it's not that you forget, but Bruce Willis is old and kind of grimy and he kind of like grizzled good looking. I kind of forgot that he was kind of like delicate good looking. Like he is a nice looking fella.
He had a good mix of like tough guy, but not like crappy Adrian Brody or something, but just, it was a more Paul Newman kind of situation.
Also, I didn't get a chance to look it up, but do you know what happened to his arm? I noticed he's got a big surgery scar going down one of his right shoulder. Anytime he moved the camera, the light kind of caught it. I mean, it's a thick scar from
never
upper
noticed.
Shoulder to like almost the armpit. Like he had some kind of massive surgery.
Never noticed. Yeah. And being the admin of Bruce Willis's arm.biz, you'd think I would know something like that.
You would. But in fact, I know that I'm just a mod on there now, but I think I'm going to need admin rights after that.
I think. Yeah.
All right. So we meet Bruce Willis in his apartment. Mm-hmm. Right? We meet him in his apartment, right?
Well, we do, but before we do that, we see...
Am I out of order?
No, well, just slightly. There's the scene where the giant ball of cosmic evil is born.
Yeah.
And Zeus, Tiny Lister, from his like weird lounge party office that just anyone can go into, apparently, he's monitoring people, monitoring the ball being formed.
Yeah.
And the priest, who is the expert of astral phenomenon.
Yeah, Yukon Cornelius.
Yeah. He just speaks up about how it's bad, and they try to blow it up, and it doesn't work. Yeah, and then it goes to Bruce Willis.
Yeah, that's right. Bruce Willis driving. So is he? Do we meet him in the apartment or the cab?
No, we meet him in the apartment because he wakes up and.
Oh, that's right.
And everything comes to life, and then he gets his apartment distribute cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it says the cigarettes, which are like 90% filter, which I thought was a clever
device. Yeah, I like the cigarettes.
But then
I mean, I like everything.
But then, like, because it's this fucking movie. You see this 90% cigarettes, and you see the sign above it that says, like, you know, to quit is my goal. And then there's a voice that tells you that. Because why wouldn't there be? Why wouldn't you just hammer this point home? Why wouldn't everything just be over the top and in your face because you're too stupid to put a thought in your own head with this movie? This movie is so... If you saw this movie and you love it and you were 8, absolutely, you are correct. But if you saw this movie above that age and are like, no, it's good, you are an idiot.
Yeah, I think the problem is that it's super predictive of modern technology and that you're missing that point because you're not realizing that, like, modern technology is that irritating. You've seen people the way they use their phones. How is that any less irritating than the technology interface in this movie?
Because the phone doesn't say it out loud too. I also think you're putting on it's more just that Luke, it's more
hello,
that Luke
Siri.
It's more that Luc Besson happened to be right. Not that he was trying to be right.
That dude
is not subtle at all.
If I can go out of order, there's three or four different things that this movie predicted that came true in the future. I'll say it right now. 3D printing of tissue in the rebuild scene. Roombas.
Mm-hmm.
Remote control cockroaches, which they have in labs. And I think there's another one. But right there, that's this movie is more predictive than any, you know, what people were respectable sci-fi. This movie has three predictions.
Oh, three, okay.
Nearly 30 years
All
right, in the
well,
future.
We should probably stop it early because I'm convinced now.
Well, as well you should because you didn't think about that, did you? Because you're so hell-bent on thinking like, oh, this is annoying. But
because it is.
Because the future is annoying. Think about the future that we live in right now. It's irritating.
Yeah.
Talk to Siri out loud. I mean, everything's loud. People talking to Bluetooth things in their ears. I mean, that's
You're talking about people talking, not machines yelling at you.
Siri's a machine. It yells at you. You ever try cussing at it? It yells at you.
I try not to swear at my machines.
Yeah, well, at least in this future, they weren't brainwashed like you.
Fair enough.
Part of this dystopian future in heavy quotes, because frankly, this future is better than the one we live in
now. I do like the idea of window service restaurants when he's...
Talking to the Chinese Thai food guy?
From Lethal Weapon 4. That same actor.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That part, here's the other thing that I can actually say annoyed me about the movie. There's very few things. I really didn't need his mom. His mom really took me out of the film.
I have a whole thing with that.
Yeah.
This movie is not that big on women. Like, no. Women are boobs or they're nags. Like, you have either all, like, the stewardesses and whatever that are just, everyone in this movie is a model. Every female in this movie is a model. When you work at McDonald's, you're gorgeous and you're wearing a corset. Or you're the homely Princess Leia looking lady that's supposed to be Bruce Willis's wife. Or a nag. It's very French guy, basically. I just, again, something I noticed because I was not enjoying myself. But yeah, it's just, this movie is a little... In the woke era of 2017, that part doesn't
hold
up that well.
I mean, the thing that saves the movie is a woman. The other thing that saves the movie...
Who's perfect. She's perfect. And they mentioned that several times. Because she's hot.
The other thing that saves the movie, and she can fight really well and commune with the five elements.
For some reason. Yeah, she can...
For some reason. She was designed that way. She's got 20 different strands of DNA.
Oh, so you have multiple strands of DNA so you can fight good.
Perfect. Right. Well, fight well, John.
Okay, sorry.
You know, if you're going to make fun of this wonderful movie, at least do it grammatically correct.
All right.
So.
Chicken.
She's perfect. And opera singer lady, that's a lady.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
That lady that Ruby Rod ate out for no reason, that was a lady. Yeah. She was a fully fleshed character.
Yeah, clearly.
She went to Vassar, John.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah. I'm tired of your Vassar bashing. I totally understand. Like, that's the thing is, I'm probably going to agree with a lot of the points that you make about the movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
It's not necessarily the lack of, like, female showing up that I love, but I love the bananas, bonkers choices.
That's a lot of this, is that this movie is not incompetently made. There's some really stupid stuff, but it's just, I hate every choice this movie made. I hate everything about its style and what it did. And it's largely a point of aesthetics to some degree. I will say the script doesn't make any sense at all.
Now that I actually, like, not joking, I would disagree with. What part doesn't make sense?
Okay. Why is it a covert mission to go get these stones? Why not just have the lady come to Earth? Why not do that? You own a giant military, apparently, that could take this person or this being to Earth. Why not do that? Why was any of it covert? Why was there so much subterfuge involved in getting on the plane to get to Flossin Paradise when Zorn could just go there? He just went there. Well, and it wasn't a problem.
Because they weren't aware of the fact that the bad guys knew where the stones were. The idea was they're trying to hide the locations. No one knew where the stones were until it was overheard by the cockroach bug. Now, mm-hmm. they didn't know the cockroach bug had overheard them. So they were doing a covert mission because they didn't. I can't believe I'm defending this. But
yeah,
it's
no,
true.
Go ahead. Is do.
As far as they knew, they were the only ones that knew where the stones were. So they needed to do it discreetly.
Right. So and the only way to do that was to hire a guy that's not even in the military anymore.
Well, he's supposed to. OK.
And highly publicize his going to Flossin Paradise.
No, I'll give you that. That was a little awkward. But I think the idea there is that he's supposed to be this amazing like he's supposed to be the one guy that could pull off he's supposed to be the most trustable dude in the military.
Right. Which is evident because he doesn't work for the military anymore and he drives a cab.
No, but he is getting apparently hourly calls from his old CO to beg him to come back in. Remember, his boss called him that morning before knowing about any of this.
Oh, I thought that was just Finger. I'm sorry.
No, that wasn't Finger. That was Sergeant Replicant.
Oh, Brian James, who I felt really bad for in this movie, even though he's been in worse.
Brian James, I like his face a lot. He is so he's just such a. And I want to say, if there's some choices that are made in this movie, I don't like it. It's a lot of his facial work is, but I like looking at him enough that I kind of forgave it. But sure. he hammed it up in a
appropriate manner for this movie.
No, but not for how everybody else was acting. So like he wasn't on the same level of ham as the rest of the scene around him. So really just kind of stuck out a bit.
Not, he certainly was doing the equal amount of ham as the music. The music is so just pummel you over the head with what's going on. Everything is so goofy. And like the scene, well, who taught him how to negotiate? Well, I wonder. Blah. And then it's him looking, you know, like coughing and acting all, well, not me.
Yeah.
That was, there's so much, this movie would be so much better if you reduced the zaniness by like 30%. I would, 50%. Like they, like in Interstellar, when he tells the robot, just, tone it down. If you did that, this would be so much better of a movie. But this movie is Jar Jar Binks with less racism.
Well, I don't know about less racism, because that's one of the, I actually made a note, actually, here's a note I've made about our show so far. And this is not our fault, but I said so far.
Yeah, please put that caveat in there.
But so far, the closest thing to positive depiction of a person of color is Lucius Fox and the Blue Opera Singer.
That's true.
There's every single person that's remotely not white in every movie we've seen so far.
Well, that's not our fault.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not our fault. Like, right. But it's just one of those things that, like, you know, trying to be aware, you know, be woke in a certain way, trying to be aware of things. Like, as we're watching these, and I'm not thinking these are particularly racist movies, but it's like, boy, you're really scratching pretty deep to try to find anybody remotely not horrible as a person of color, except for opera singer lady. By the way, Basson's fiance. Or a long-term girlfriend going into this movie who he left during the filming for Mila Jovovich.
Oh.
So we've established...
That I'm irritated.
Corbin Dallas, handsome motherfucker, really good relationship with his Thai food guy.
Yeah.
His mom's a little shrill. He's got a great relationship with his boss. They cut to... The Manda Shawan are on the way to the planet.
Right. They're supposed to deliver these
carrying
things.
Carrying the fifth element.
They're shot down by...
The Mangalores.
Yeah. Which that... The way that scene is shot, I found very irritating. Like, just the way the close-ups are, it's very cartoonish and... It's almost like fisheye lens kind of thing. And, like, the movements they're making barely correspond to what you're seeing on screen. And so they blow up the thing.
Which I actually thought that, just that spot to stop you there, mm-hmm. I haven't made note, was actually really clever. As far as like a plot device, because again, every choice they make is weird. Instead of the good aliens coming down and giving the instructions, like normally a movie would have a handoff here, would be the ancient power would meet Bruce Willis or somebody. Like it would be Luke meets Obi-Wan, Obi-Wan dies. Uh-huh. You don't have the old master meet the new, you know, whoever the hero, the Joseph Campbell-esque hero going on the journey.
Right.
They explode and then have to be rebuilt from their hand. I actually thought that was a clever kind of... Again, every choice is against the natural progression of this movie would have been those aliens landing, then the Mangalores coming down and killing them. And now it's like, I'm unprotected and I have to, you know, finish this mission on my own.
Yes, pointlessly extending things is good. I agree.
Not pointlessly. It's an idiot. Because again, what do you want? Just a boring sci-fi movie?
Well, so
that's what this
so she
these
shows,
choices were taken
so
away.
She shows up.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the hand shows up and they rebuild this thing that turns out to be Mila Jovovich because.
What do you mean because?
Why is it Mila Jovovich? Like, why is that? Why is that what they look like inside?
So here's the thought that I had, because I was trying to figure that out as well. But it's what I actually think is happening. Since she's the perfect thing, what it is that her DNA got resequenced on a human world. So it resequenced into a perfect human. I'm not even saying, but follow me here. If she had landed on the Montashawan homeworld and they rebuilt her from DNA, it would turn into Montashawan. It's more like it was like a Lego fun factory. She got pressed into a human shape because that computer knows how to build humans.
But wasn't she Montashawan to begin with?
No.
What was that arm then?
No, she was, because she's built. She was built in the form of Montashawan, but her DNA has every form possible.
Okay.
So since she was built by humans, she became the perfect human. If she was built by the Mangalores, she would have been a perfect Mangalore. If she was built by a blue opera lady, she'd be the perfect blue opera lady.
Why does that matter? Why does she need to be the perfect human?
Well, because she's got to be the thing that unites everything. The whole point is she's like a...
But she doesn't have to interact with anyone to make that happen, really. It does not matter.
What do you mean? She's got to be like a messianic figure. That's sort of the point.
All she has to do is stand in a thing and look up.
No, she has to feel love.
Okay.
So, yeah. They put her into the 3D printer, and she pops out.
Mm-hmm.
First case of the replicant guy having his face look weird is him going... You know, work on your communication ability.
Yeah, that did make it, like, why are you dangling your dog tags at her?
Yeah, I'll give you that one. That part was weird, but I think they were trying to get across that guy might be a bit of an idiot.
Yes.
But I'm kind of okay with it just because, I mean, frankly, we just saw Mila Jovovich completely naked in a tube. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty all right with that happening.
Yeah, welcome to why most people like this movie. Well, I think is an unsung thing. People just like it because she's nude a lot in it.
Well, she's not even nude a lot in it.
She's nude a fair amount.
Not really. I mean, she's skimpily dressed. And don't slut shame, John.
Well, also...
She's a perfect being.
Okay, well, we'll get to the dressing in a bit. Yes. Why the priest has that outfit.
Yeah, that's a little weird. I'll be honest with you.
But whatever. Okay,
I'll give you that one. I mean, I hate to take away from some points of something that I believe should be a 98% rated of Rotten Tomatoes movie. That, yeah, all right, fine. He probably shouldn't have had those clothes.
Yeah.
Here's another note I made here in the 3D printing scene. The computer animation in this future is great.
It's great, yeah.
But I mean, you can't believe that. It was 19, no. Whatever.
What but then her solution, so she's confronted with her solution, as most people, is to jump through a wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As one does. Yeah.
And then jump off a building.
Yeah.
The jump off a building thing, that, you know, you were saying George Lucas stole from this movie. That very much... episode two, I'm like, this is exactly...
That is a scene, in episode two. So I would like to just read a couple of notes that I wrote here. Computer animation in this future is perfect. The movie predicted 3D printing of tissue, and then thermal bandages, and quote, ... Yep. And then I put, Jesus, she's a delight to look at, yowzes.
Yep.
And I think that's a really fair estimation of how you should react to this film.
Like a cartoon wolf from a Hanna-Barbera cartoon? Like, ooh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
So
just hitting myself on the head with a shoe.
She jumps to the wall because she's trying to escape the, again, keep in mind she's the perfect being. So she's very smart. Yep. She knows what's up. She knows she's in a weird...
Apparently.
Thing. Yeah.
Like her smartness is something I don't fully understand. She can read, but she can't speak English.
I think the idea is that she has the mother, and this is, there's a lot of tropes here that, and not to take it too seriously, because obviously I know it's a Fifth Element, but... There's a lot of tropes here that go to some certain ancient alien and kind of occult esoteric topics that I've been into over the years. And there's this concept.
We call the segment, I'm sorry I asked.
There's this concept of a universal language that all languages derive from. And that's what he's playing off of here, is that she, in her DNA, is encoded the universal language, the angelic language, whatever.
Okay.
So by knowing that, any other language acquisition would become easy, because that's basically like the source code for everything. So it'd be easy to kind of break down. It'd be like somebody writing really shitty English and you know English.
So,
that's a bad example, but you get the idea.
So when she's reading, please help, she knows what that means. It's not just, it isn't just like, I'm reading whatever's in front of me.
No, I think she has like a rudimentary knowledge of what please help means, probably based on the eyes of the child in that picture, because she has a creature very, you know, a pure empathy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's, she knew what it meant. It wasn't like she was going to read the number that you were supposed to call, as though that was the language. She knew what English was.
Yeah, I don't think she would go, Groupon.
Yeah.
$20 for two. Like, no. I think the idea here is
because
that,
they make a point of her learning English.
Well, no,
because they do when they get on the plane. He's like in the last like 5 minutes. Yeah. He's like, oh, you learn English? She's like, yeah, I learn, and just points at something.
Yeah. Well, okay, but I think that's more like a shorthand. Is that she has the capability of learning any language? So more she learned the rudiments of interaction. So if she had just sat there with a dictionary, which is kind of what happened, she read that the Wikipedia of their time. Number four, invented Wikipedia.
Invented Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Thank you, Fifth Element.
Which, by the way, if you go to
how else was I going to learn about Sonic's pregnancies without you, Wikipedia?
If you go to fifth-element.wikia.com, there is because it's one of the greatest movies ever made. read the I can't do it on the show because it's way too long, but read the entry for Lilu. And of course by Lilu I mean Lumini, La Cabellana, La Manantakai, Ekabat Di Sabat.
This is a movie worth looking into that deeply.
But if you read the description of her, it goes into, so it's like Lilu is a blah blah blah. And sorry, I don't mean to be familiar. I mean Lilumani La Cabaria La Manantakai Ekabat Di Sabat. My apologies.
Each syllable increases my rage.
So, but if you go into the description, and it reads, so it starts off as like a regular wiki entry, but then it goes into very small detail. So I just want to read, here's, let me see if I can't find one spot. So once rendezvoused with Cornelius, who immediately recognizes her as the supreme being he is waiting for, the woman is roused from unconsciousness by Corbin, who has taken it upon himself to kiss her gently. Holding a gun to his head, she repeats angrily, Seno acto gamat. Cornelius later translates it to mean, without my permission. It is during the scene she introduces herself as Lilu Lakarama Lamaltiker Ekpati Sabat. Corbin, unable to pronounce the lengthy title, asks her for a shorter name, to which she replies, Lilu. So every single scene, there's that little thing where it gets into way too much detail. So it's not actually doing any kind of like descriptive or like shortening of it. It's just someone going like, and then mom, and then Lilu, yeah. She went into the place, yeah. And then it turns out, and then Corbin, he kissed her. Yeah. And then it's written like a 5-year-old excitedly giving the plot details.
But isn't that this movie? Isn't the idea about this movie? Didn't he like write this when he was 8 or something?
Yeah, I think he was a teenager.
Yeah, because that's what it feels like. It very much feels like I had dinner with some friends this past weekend and spent some time with their 7-year-old. And that's what this movie feels like, is just that, is this excited fervor of like, and this, and it's, I'm exhausted 5 minutes into the damn movie that I don't care anymore.
Well, I'm sorry.
Because it doesn't back up what it's, the fervor that's there. It's, no, what's happening is not that exciting.
For the audience, I guess old man John just doesn't like childhood innocence.
That's true, because that's not what this movie has.
Well, apparently you miss a lot of the points.
If she can understand English and read English.
Yeah.
How come Bruce Willis is talking to her like she's an idiot and she's acting like she's an idiot when he's like, shorter name, and she, what?
Oh, no, it's not that she can speak English yet, it's that she has the capability of it.
Okay.
So like,
like anybody?
No, like she has.
So no one can learn English?
No.
Only a select few?
No. What I would say is this, like, if you knew Latin, it would be a lot easier to learn Spanish than to learn German. She knows like ultra Latin, like she knows the thing that's the mother of all languages. So seeing kind of other anything will look familiar to her.
Okay.
So she doesn't speak English yet, but essentially given, 5 minutes in a dictionary, she could speak English.
Okay.
So like her vocabulary at that point are the ones that she'd been introduced
to. Fair enough. It's a dumb thing to get hung up on. I was just asking.
Yeah. Well, because you just want to hate this film instead
of
just getting
into it. Yeah. No, I
don't
want to. I do. I get to. I'm allowed to. I'm grown.
Now, speaking, so you didn't like some of the designs. I was, the one part that I liked, and some of the designs are a little over the top, but I like when he flies under the fog and it turns into Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'll give you that.
It was really weird.
So here's a question. Here's in that sort of thing. Why does a taxi cab have a thing that says attack incoming? Why does it have that sensor?
Did it say attack incoming?
Yeah, he's got like when the cops are going to shoot at him, there's a little screen that flashes and says attack incoming.
Oh, I don't think I noticed that part.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't really.
It,
I mean,
it doesn't matter.
It's a rough future. I mean, you see how many guns he had to confiscate from people, presumably wearing different kinds of photo hats.
Sure.
McDonald's scene. Let's talk about this for
a second. Actually, I have a note.
Oh, please.
That just says,
please.
No, go ahead. My only note says McDonald's scene. And I don't remember too much about it other than being like annoyed at the crappy humor in it of like, I need 2 drinks.
Yeah.
Whoop, they spilled on me.
Yeah.
And then again, the staff at McDonald's wearing corsets.
Yeah, the staff of McDonald's are like that kind of weird, like the people that would be in a gang if Harley Quinn had a gang, you know, kind of like.
Yeah, like if Harley Quinn ran the baseball Furies.
Yeah, yeah, like the Raggedy Ann's in the baseball, in the world of the Warriors. But that's the McDonald's logo, though.
Oh, yeah, no, it's.
No, but what I mean is that means McDonald's paid to be in this movie.
Yeah.
McDonald's paid for that, John.
Yeah. Yeah, this is French McDonald's. Things are a lot looser there.
Like Le Royale with cheese.
Exactly, yeah.
That might be Burger King.
Yeah.
See, I think, again, you're just missing the joy here. John. Mm.
Is that what's happening there?
Luc Besson.
Yeah.
Got money from McDonald's.
Yeah.
For that scene.
Sure.
How does that not, flip your joy circuit? And I don't mean your clit.
Yeah, because it's, how is that different from Michael Bay getting money for Mountain Dew?
It's Raggedy and sex workers.
Yeah. It's a scantily clad attractive woman with McDonald's on it. Why is that weird? I don't know. I didn't think that was that subversive.
No, I just thought it was just weird. It's not the subversive part. It's just, and then Space Fat Guy Cop.
Yeah. Which was yes.
That guy, one of the best. All right. So,
oh man. So I hate the police outfits. They're these outfits that if this movie was animated, I would probably cut it a lot more slack.
Yeah.
Because it would also look a lot better. Because those are things that in a drawing, I'm sure look real cool. But in reality, if you look at the old pre-crisis Batman versus Adam West in the outfit and how silly Adam West sort of looks.
Yeah.
It's that. It's as soon as you put that in reality, it's, oh, that doesn't seem functional. It doesn't seem...
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's just weird. But again, if I've read a comic book of this movie, which I know they were trying to go for that, the kind of Mobius and that kind of stuff, I think it would be great, but it did not translate at all.
No, I got you. So you think you know more about clothes than Gautier. Cool. No, I get it. Loud and clear.
Yeah.
Loud and clear. I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
On the nose.
Yeah. Based on this movie. Yep.
So.
Most people do. Oshkosh Bagosh knows more.
He goes and drops it. He drops off, and I'm going to stop saying her whole name.
Yep.
Lilu. Oh. Of course, I'd be Lilu Labadai Lakabana Labatakai Akbati
Sabadai.
Drops her off at Bilbo's house. Uh-huh. And his name is...
Who is really good at this.
Yeah.
He deserves a better movie.
This is the note I actually have here is Ian Holm and Bruce Willis are very charming. I wish they had more screen time together. I want them to be in a buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
I loved watching them interact with each other.
And we'll get to this, but take out Ruby Rod, put him in. That's what I would enjoy that movie so much more. If you got rid of him as Ruby Rod as a sidekick character, if you had just that one really irritating scene with him at the very beginning, fine. That was just a goofy kind of thing. But the fact that he's still in the movie after that is all. But I don't want to get to Ruby Rod.
Because I have a lot to say about Ruby Rod.
Oh, boy.
So they meet up with Ian Holm. He shows up at his house and drops off the perfect thing. And Bruce Willis essentially is out of the movie now. Mm-hmm. I mean, not, you know, but the idea is that, you know,
he did his thing and yeah.
Yeah, handoff. And then he goes back home. And I want an entire... sequel exploring the relationship between Corbin Dallas and Finger. Because when he lays back and goes, oh, yeah, fair drop bath. Oh, yeah, how big a fair? Oh, I don't know, about 5'9", blue eyes.
Yeah.
It's like this sensual, erotic. I mean, he's having phone sex with Finger.
Yes, no, I agree. I would like to see that as well because I did not understand. So he's basically Danny DeVito from Taxi. He's his dispatcher. Yeah.
I think
but they had a very personal relationship.
Yeah, very personal. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't on screen, but I think the sexual chemistry between him and Finger was stronger than him and Lilu.
God damn it. Yeah, do it.
Lilu Lamina Lakabara Lamina Tsukai Akbati Samat. Well, okay, so here's a bit of good news for you and the audience. I've now gotten my notes to the point that I no longer have her name on the screen. So
good.
That might be the last time.
Which we kind of talked about this when I was angrily texting you about this movie. The weird sort of Tunisian market music that's playing during this whole car chase thing. It's this busy Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of sounding thing.
Yeah.
And I guess it was just trying to evoke the feeling of a busy place or something, but that was an odd choice. It was a fine song, but it felt a little out of, you know.
I liked it again, and in the same your word choice right there. It just keeps going back to every choice in this movie is odd. It's weird Egyptian Tunisian market music over a space cab chase. It's What happens after that? Because my next note is about Gary Oldman, and I don't.
So what happens is they have the fifth element. They have learned. She tells them she's not at all concerned about the case being empty. There's the whole scene where Gary Oldman hilariously sells guns to those
Mandalorians.
To the Mandalorians, which again is
Mandalorians. Sorry, Mandalorians are that's Boba Fett's people. Yeah.
But again, it's perfect. A perfect example of this movie. The stupid gun he sells them.
Yeah.
Does everything. Does way too many things. It's got a flamethrower. It's got an ice thing. It's got whatever. Because why wouldn't?
I love the repeat feature though. I actually thought the repeat
feature is cool. Yeah, the repeat feature is really cool. It could have just been that, but it had to be everything. And then because they did not deliver the case, or regardless of whether or not they delivered the case correctly, they got the case. The stones weren't in the case.
Yeah.
He blows them all up because he gives them a weapon. He doesn't explain. Them. And so it blows them all up because he's an excellent businessman, which, by the way, he just fires a million people with just the snap of his fingers. No problem.
Yeah. Well, how else are you going to show that he's evil, John?
Right. Well,
haven't you heard of character development?
His character is utterly pointless. Arguably, it puts a few things into play, but he's a terrible character. And Gary Oldman just eats up the scenery, just chewing through it like crazy. And I like Gary Oldman, but he is abysmal in this.
And I would just like to point out my note for Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman seems to be having fun, and his accent is nearly as good as Batman Begins.
It's
because, boy, is his accent a piece of crap.
The whole scene where the Roombas show up.
Well, this is where Cornelius gets dragged in to talk to Zorg.
Yeah.
They have a whole thing where Zorg chokes on Cherry.
Right. Well, no, Zorg gives this whole speech about how selling guns is fine because destruction helps create life.
Yeah.
And then he chokes on a cherry, which somehow negates his whole point. The movie treats it like, well, no, see, that's wrong because he choked on a cherry because he doesn't know how to swallow things because he's an idiot.
I'll give you, this was a weird scene. I made a note. Okay, the desk scene is a little dumb because then he starts banging on the desk and the desk starts having wacky things pop out of it like a flotation raft. And then I think next to Finger, the greatest character in this movie, Tiny Desk Elephant.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because it's the fifth element.
Yeah.
Because this movie's fucking great. You know what he would do in this movie? The arms dealer, the villain of the piece, that's signed a contract with the embodiment of evil, adorable desk elephant.
Right. Which I have a lot of questions about that.
Are they all, when can I have one?
And no,
I
should watch no, scene no, again? Not about the desk elephant. Okay. So yeah, he's apparently in league with the giant ball of evil.
Yeah.
Which has just been created.
No, I think it just showed up. I think it's been...
So there's like pilgrims for it? There's like, it has a Silver Surfer?
No, I think it just can communicate along. I think it's just kind of like long distance call.
It can't because it absorbed all the communication satellites in order to make a phone call.
No, I think
they specifically say that because this was the point I was going to bring about earlier. He's like, why is he eating all the communication satellites? And one guy goes, maybe he wants to make a call. And then it fucking makes a phone call.
Okay.
The movie goes, isn't this real stupid? And you're supposed to go, no, it's great.
You know, actually I think you might be right, but I let me argue the other side because I took it this way. That was a poor edit spot where he was taking down communications to help his, you know, as you do when wanting to take over any place, you take down the communications. And that was a shitty quip that shouldn't have made the edit. Because I think what it was eating the communication satellites, so you can't communicate.
They specifically
anymore. Say. Some asshole at a desk made a quip, and it sounds like that's now gospel for the plot. He's going, oh, maybe he wants to make a telephone call. And then it cuts to the telephone call. But it's not like a one-to-one. I think it's just a shitty...
So the movie's bad. And stupid.
No, one line I think was a poor edit choice. But joke.
How did he get involved with Mr. Shadow? What's his grand plan? The thing wants to eradicate human life, and is with what money or what promises of great power? Why is he in league with this thing?
Well, I think the idea is that from the idiot villain perspective, and he's not exactly put out as like a genius. You know, this isn't you know.
No, he's just smart enough to own a multi-bajillion-dollar company and make a whole lot of arms. He's a rube.
Well, okay, but let's back up a second because that was a terrible argument. Yeah, because no one's parents has ever handed them down a corporation.
So you've decided that he didn't do it himself.
Yeah, why? Yeah, but it's not like they said he built himself up. I mean, there's no evidence either way. It is a dystopian future. One would assume that the 1% is firmly entrenched.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, but
let's make all kinds of excuses for this movie.
No, but it it's as in the film, your theory as mine. They're both, I mean, they're both leaps of logic.
Sure.
But, no, I, what
that
I,
the only character named Zorg built his own company. That is an incredible leap of logic.
Well, this is his last name.
Yeah. So that's, I'm saying that because it's his last name, he built a company. You're saying, no, clearly it's a long family line.
But his last
name. They started making slingshots in the 1800s.
Halliburton's a guy's name.
Yeah.
His son runs the company after Halliburton died. That's not, this isn't weird. Smith and Wesson, that's two people. Then Smith and Wesson.
Okay. So, fine. I just think that's a larger leap to make than the one I'm making.
No, not really. I mean, yeah, that's fine. I'm saying they both make equal amount of sense, given the textual evidence doesn't give evidence either way.
Sure.
But what I got was that he could communicate before that communication satellite, because I took that as just a crappy edit point. I thought that was just a quip at a desk.
But it still doesn't explain anything whole purpose is.
The plan is, that's the whole thing about Order from Chaos, is that Zorg is going to make a shitload of money kind of rebuilding the Earth after this dude kind of fucks it up. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the idea.
Well, I guess it's never really explained how this thing is going to destroy all life. Is it like a hydrogen bomb? You know, does it just kill biological things and everything's fine? Or is it like Galactus, where it takes out the whole planet?
I don't, I think it's very much, I actually took this as very much like, who's the Infinity Gauntlet guy?
Thanos.
With his anti-life equation? No, that's the guy
Darkseid.
From DC.
It's the same.
It's Darkseid. It's the anti-life equation. That's sort of what I was thinking. It was something like that, where it's like, you're kind of like, it's almost like you just want to build the dark version of life. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not there.
I mean, it's again, because I believe this is ultimately a movie for children.
Yeah.
It is just, it's bad. We got to stop it. And that's why I say, if you watch the movie when you're 8, it's fine. But my problem is, it's not that people like this movie. It's that people tell me it's a good movie. And those are two separate things.
Yeah.
Like, Skittles are fine, but they're not good. You can like Skittles, but Skittles are not good.
I mean, Skittles are delicious.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they're good. Skittles and a delicious pastry made by, you know, the fanciest, best chef ever. Those are two completely different things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, I would say, like, when I say that this movie's amazing, I'm not saying it's a good movie.
Right.
I'm saying this movie's fucking amazing.
And I'm not saying you, but I have legitimately gotten into arguments with people about it, or people trying to tell me that it's cheesy on purpose, which I absolutely disagree with. I think it tries for levels of camp, but it's not wink, wink, look at how dopey this is.
No, I think
it is honestly dopey.
I think cheese is the wrong term. I think it's purposely campy, and I think campy and cheesy get confused often.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is campy and in a really fun kind of, I don't know, it's
almost to the point of self-parody. Like, it's so over the top constantly.
See, I like that. I think that's fun. All right, so let's all right, so Zorg, obviously greatest villain in history.
Sure.
He's just a villain. I mean, there's so many movies where it's just the bad guy's just the bad guy.
But I just think he's just very not interesting. He just has a Texan accent for some reason.
Yeah, his accent's pretty terrible.
And the Roach, by the way.
Yeah.
So then they find out, so getting back to the plot 90 minutes later, they find out that where the stones are by infiltrating a Roach with a radio on its back.
Yeah. Which they have now.
That's fine. That's
invented.
Cool. But let's put it dead center of the desk. Let's do that. Let's drive it right in everyone's face so they can see it, which is a great thing to do with spy stuff.
Because
people see roaches all the time and it's not a big deal.
Well, you know, I don't have anything to say about that.
Yeah, because it's real dumb.
Well, but that's not the movie's fault. That's the villain's fault, because that guy was a terrible cockroach operator.
Right,
because
I forgot this was a documentary of things that actually happened.
He's well known. That guy is well known within circles.
Yeah,
like, which, old Larry, that guy sucks at cockroach operations.
Tricky is not a great actor.
He's, you know what he is? He's the goose of this. He just, you know, he got his dumb head bounced off the escape hatch and he dies at the second act.
So they have him smash it so he can go, oh, that's loud.
Oh, is that a guy? Who's Tricky?
Tricky, he's a terrible thing. I believe he's in Massive Attack.
Because he's a terrible actor, so I assumed he wasn't hired.
He's not good. So they find out that the thing is on Flossden Paradise again, and so because it would be absolutely impossible for them to escort this woman diva thing to Earth, to where the things need to be to fire the laser, they have to go. They have to send Corbin Dallas to Flossden Paradise.
Well, they just know that she knows where they are. They don't know that they're in her yet.
Okay.
Or that
they can't convince her to take them to where the.
Well, she's got.
They can't eliminate the middleman.
She's having the biggest concert like ever. She's got dignitaries from all around the universe
sure.
there at Flossden Paradise.
Right.
I mean, John, Ruby Rod is doing 2 full days of live broadcast for Lost in Paradise. Do you expect her to just reschedule?
Yes, I do.
Get the stones.
To save a planet full of people. Oddly enough, I do. But so they decide that Corbin Dallas is the only person that can handle this, which yes. I did, even though it was still done in a very irritating manner. I did like the gags when everyone is in his apartment and like the auto wash is going. There were a couple of moments of this almost Brazil like things being out of your control and you know the system being more of a pain in the butt than it's actually worth. But so when the priest gets wrapped up in the thing and Lilu accidentally gets auto washed, that's fine. But when he basically murders the people by shoving them in the fridge and it's just like whoop whoop.
And that, I quote, did he just freeze his old boss to death? ?
Yeah. Because and then it's cartoonish. I think that's largely an issue I have with this movie. Everything is so over the top and ridiculous. At no point am I worried about anything. At no point do I care about what's going on.
I find no problem with that. A little bit earlier, just step back in that scene of everybody being the thing. Again, choices just being the weirdest thing. Who do they bring that's going to be Corbin Dallas's fake wife to go on the trip? Some weird, I called her Major Helga.
Yeah.
Just this giant, you know, like.
Yeah,
like,
the
like,
one not model in the movie.
Bonkers. That's what's, this movie's amazing.
Now, that's not a weird choice. That's like, well, you wanted this ugly lady when you got the perfect
woman
right there.
But why would she be wearing, why is this Germanic Helga-like opera singer-looking woman? Again, I just figured out because it's opera singing. This is all a circle. This is a brilliant filmmaker.
Have you never seen a cartoon ever? Because they do that stuff all the time.
Well, exactly. But this isn't a cartoon. That's why it's amazing. I did make one point here because we missed it earlier. The Mangalores, those fucking look good.
Oh yeah, no,
like,
I'll give you that.
It was one of those things that like I haven't seen this movie like actually sat down and watched it like on purpose. You know, quite a while. I was expecting most, and you know, any of the CGI of course doesn't hold up at all. But man, those things look really great. I mean, they're really great. You know, what do you call it? Puppeteer work or whatever.
Yeah. Which okay, they decide because they need to pretend to send Corbin Dallas. He has to be this fake contest winner. He can't just be a guy that's there. They make this big fanfare of him being there. All this time is spent at the airport trying to get out there, which the airport is filled with garbage for some reason, which that doesn't matter. They mentioned there's the thing, but it's still just okay.
There was a couple spots where I was
again, that was like this almost Brazil like thing where it's the future doesn't really work, I guess.
Yeah, I was, or there's a couple spots where I wasn't sure if there were possibly cut scenes that probably. Maybe had an explanation. Because I nearly bought this and had it expedite shipped to my house to see if I could find some cut scenes to watch.
But everyone's plan to subvert this is to get very sweaty and pretend they are Corbin Dallas.
Yeah.
So like that we go through this same joke multiple times.
Yeah.
How is that even going to work? You're just going to show up and be like, I'm Corbin Dallas. Oh, okay. Tricky guy, probably, because he's part of the Zorg Corporation. You know, maybe has fake stuff. But again, you are this giant, successful corporate guy. You can't just swing a ticket. You can't just go there.
I hate to say this, but I'm gonna give this one to you because this part didn't make sense.
No, it goes on way too long.
And it also didn't make sense because Zorg has a private jet that he flew there.
He just goes there.
He could have just had Tricky. Yeah. I as much as I hate to say it because this movie is essentially flawless, I'm gonna give you that one.
Fine. Yeah.
Oh, okay,
so,
but to make up for that, a scene that had me, I couldn't be happier. Fucking Cornelius spilling his guts out to the bartender.
Here's what I will give you. The robot bartender is the best character in this movie.
The robot bartender rules.
When he spills out his guts and the robot like shakes his head and then goes, do you want some more?
Yeah. Robot
Perfect.
Bartender is the shit.
Perfect. Best character in the entire thing.
And I put
understated.
3 exclamation points. Amazing. Simply amazing.
Yeah.
Also, Tricky or no, this was meth addict and his girlfriend pretending to be Corbin Dallas before they dive into the garbage, which I thought was a really fun scene. But vomiting and your face getting changed later was stolen by Men in Black. This movie was lifted many times because he was doing like the.
Does this predate Men in Black?
I think so. If not, then this movie totally stole that from Men in Black because it's like the exact same effect.
So yeah, so after all that pointless stuff, they finally, which the weird police state they live in, where he pretends to be Corbin Dallas and then. All, like Tricky pretends to be Corbin Dallas and all the guns come down. And
yeah. Like, I did weirdly, and it was mentioned a few times before that, I did like the, as a futuristic device, I did like the put your hands in the yellow circles thing. I thought that was cool.
Which I still don't understand the meat popsicle line, but whatever. Because they have Corbin Dallas do that, and they have his neighbor, because he puts like his
thing.
And when they're like, are you human? He's like, negative, I'm a meat popsicle. I don't that's just one of those, that's like at the end of Blade when he's like, always some motherfucker trying to ice skate uphill. I just don't understand what that means.
Yeah, I don't think
people
I
love the line. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't think means. I understand the meat popsicle one.
But I also like the fake future swearing that his neighbor does of smoke you.
John,
I'm always a fan of
fake. I have in quotes that the other way I wanted to open the show was smoke you, John. Yeah. Just smoke you.
That is, I'm always a fan of stupid future swearing. But anyway.
Okay, so, and then we get introduced.
Well, before we get, there's like a good 5 minutes spent of this plane taking off. Of them like hosing off the parasites, and then like the Jamaican guys switching out the plutonium.
Rasta nuclear motor. This is dot dot dot. I'm enamored.
Yeah.
So no, but before that, we get introduced to the heart and soul of this very movie. God. He's Hot Fire, Ruby Rod, and I put, again, predictive the future, Ruby Rod speaks in emoji. That's what I said, Hot Fire.
Uh-huh.
He's fire. He's literally speaking in emoji. I said literally again.
Here's what happened. Is that Luc Besson went to Chris Tucker.
Was touched by God.
And was touched by God and said, are you familiar with Prince? And he's like, who is a Prince? Prince? Yes. Yeah, I know Prince. I want you to forget everything you know about Prince. I just took my racist uncle to go see Purple Rain. He is going to describe Prince to you. You will play that Prince. Because that is what that is.
No. He obviously got in a time machine. He showed him some kind of like a Twitter or WhatsApp or whatever the kids use, and found how modern emoji works. Because Ruby Rod was seconds away from making 100%, 100%, 100, 100, 100, Hot Fire. He was, his hair was a poop emoji. And he gets on the plane, John, he signs the manifest with champagne.
Yeah.
He looks at it. Likes what you're supposed to sign and signs it with champagne. Yep. That is the fucking best thing ever.
Right. Yeah, no, your explanation is way more logical than mine.
He signs it with champagne.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like if this was one scene, if it was just like, look at how weird the future is, and this guy, this really annoying, I can't imagine listening to that show. To that screeching.
That show would be terrible.
Yeah. It's just awful.
But again, the future's short attention spans.
He does this really annoying stuff and it's like, fine, okay, that was a scene. But then he keeps being in the movie.
Yeah.
They just keep him in the
movie.
He eats
out a stewardess. John, he gives cunnilingus to a stewardess.
Why did that need to happen at all?
Exactly why. Because this movie just makes every weird choice ever. And that's a great sequence of editing because it's the liftoff sequence to him eating the stewardess out. And then she comes when there's explosion.
Liftoff and her legs go up.
No, but then when she finally comes, there's the explosion in the gateway when Tricky gets killed.
Uh-huh.
That's perfect. That's three different things making a lady come.
Yeah, that's great. That's
wonderful.
Yeah. That's fine. Like I said, this movie is competently made. It's just that's
Rasta
irritating
guy
and stupid.
Burning weird lizard
globs
off the bottom of the space plane.
Yeah. That was all fine. Why was it there? Why did I need any of that?
No love.
No. It's because I'm already so irritated by this movie and I want them to just get on with it. Because we're an hour and plus into it and barely anything has happened.
Yeah, see, I actually thought the pacing of this movie was great. I actually made a point.
No, the pacing of this movie is nonstop.
Yeah.
It doesn't let up, but nothing happens. Very little happens.
We had 300 years of history explained to us. We found out what was going on. We had a car chase. Yeah, we had Lilu start to learn English. Mm. We got our lead character had to be created in a lab.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Frankenstein already. We're halfway through. I mean,
but it's just a lot of flash and whatever for very little actually going on for boarding a plane.
Yeah. All right. So they get on the plane and they get put to sleep. Cut to the greatest scene in cinematic history featuring Gary Oldman's head having syrup come out of it.
Right. Okay. So this is what we were talking about earlier.
Is that evil?
Yeah. This giant ball of evil.
Yeah.
Being a cosmic ball of evil that has somehow been able to communicate with Gary Oldman before calls him on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, uses the phone. Instead of anything remotely interesting, it uses the phone.
Yeah.
And again, the movie underlines. The movie says, what, is he going to make a call? That's dumb. And I hate when movies do that. And this movie's not the only... The one that immediately springs to mind is Cowboys and Aliens.
Well, at one point,
you shouldn't. It's terrible. At one point, they figure out that the reason the aliens are attacking is because Earth has huge stores of gold. And Harrison Ford goes, what do they want to do, buy something? There's a joke in the movie about what a dumb plot device that is. And I hate when they do that because yes, that's dumb. And you pointing out that it's dumb is not make it not dumb.
Well, I mean, again, not to defend bad movies, but the reason aliens want gold is because they want to make it into smaller particles and suspend it in their atmosphere. It stops the greenhouse effect.
No, I think
we
that,
all learned
I think,
it from Zechariah Sitchin.
No, I think they actually wanted to buy something.
Oh, really? The yeah. Ancient aliens, that's their excuse, because it's going to be suspended in the air.
Actually, I don't remember. But the point is, and in this movie, like, fine. Everything about this movie is so wacky and zany, fine. But it's still just, that's a device that I just don't
but
like.
But beyond the calling, is that evil coming out of his head?
I don't know what it is.
It's not blood.
Yeah, no. It's not, no, who knows what it is? It doesn't matter. It's something visual for you to look at, but don't worry about it.
So
moving
weird.
On, because he's bad, and Gary Oldman's whole outfit, the whole plastic shell that his hair is going through.
Again, predictive, because you could see that in Portland right now.
Great. I I'm not seeing that as a positive.
Predictive.
Yeah, that's not.
Oh, the one thing, I did make a note, no future film has ever gotten right. Every fucking phone still has a visible antenna. Yeah. It's one of those things. No one ever fucking gets that right. It's just one of those weird swings and a miss.
Yeah. So the thing calls him on the phone and tells him, hey, you better get those stones. Otherwise, I'm going to kill you too.
Give me those stones.
Which is, want those stones. So they get to Flossed Paradise.
Yes. But that leads into the second best character after Ruby Rod in this film getting introduced.
Yeah, the robot bartender. We talked about
the third best character of this movie after Ruby Rod and the robot bartender. The guy I referred to as Def Amadeus.
Yeah.
And then I put, Jesus, this movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, again, why did they make that choice? That's what I love about this. Every choice is weird. It's not.
It's exhausting.
It's not just what. Incredible that this happened.
It's so just exhausting. Because that, like, everything's got to be wacky and zany and weird. That because the plot has sort of trudged along. I'm so tired of it. I'm just so tired of everybody involved in this movie.
Yeah.
I just want, just get on with it. And everything seems needlessly. So when they're on Floss in Paradise, the diva lady shows up and they have to secretly, one of her minions secretly talks to, I believe it's Lilu. And it's like, she's ready to meet with you later. Why is that a secret thing? What's happening there? Like, there's no explanation for why this woman has this crazy entourage and why she's treated like some kind of religious figure. And then it's just like,
I think she's just like the best singer ever. I think
fine. Yeah, I mean, fine. She has an entourage. But just like that, like, why is there this needless padding out of, like, well, she'll meet you later. I'm going to pretend like I don't see you in the hall and we're not talking.
Well, I think the idea is that they're aware that there's some kind of negative thing probably trying to get their hands on the stone.
Right. So you shouldn't hand them off as quickly as possible. You should really stretch that out.
Well,
and
I mean, again,
that...
she's got a big concert. And I think the idea is that she has to kill herself to get those stones.
Yeah. Out. What a great plan that was.
I mean, you know, it takes sacrifice.
I guess it was, you know what, after the opera performance, I'm fine with her dying.
Let me read it, because at this point I'm just punchy from this movie because it's just amazing. This is my line in that I wrote. The opera scene is rad, though I feel like it influenced prequels and therefore is Hitler-like. The music shift to rap opera is so over the top.
Yeah, that's
I
what gets
it.
Me. When she starts doing the like the hand
it.
Gestures.
Oh,
and whatever.
I love it.
Oh.
I didn't mind the rap opera stuff, but I thought I like the way that it was kind of juxtaposed against her beating the shit out of the Mangalores. I thought that was a fun scene.
So going back to the Mangalores, the Three Stooges fighting.
I'll give you that. The scene where the one guy just stood there for a really long time so she could elbow him in the face.
No, that's this whole fucking movie.
Yeah. But I'm only giving you, you're only at like three things so far.
Yes. Just so I'm tracking correctly.
Yeah.
So the Mandalorians, whatever.
Yeah.
They bring an empty case. Gary Oldman says, you get nothing. Fine. Here's one case. Blows them up.
Yeah.
They want to get back at Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
And to do that, they're going to get the stones to get more guns. Is that right?
I have no idea.
Because why are they there is what I'm saying.
You know, I honestly didn't think about it until we started talking. Is I was under the impression the Mangalorians were serving the big evil the whole time.
No,
you're right. Because they were just working for Gary Oldman. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Because it seems like, because they wanted to get vengeance against Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
For doing that. The concept of these different factions, you know, it's not just Gary Oldman coming at them and these things, like for different reasons. That's interesting. That's fine. I just wasn't clear on that. Because they end up murdering Gary Oldman. Because Gary Oldman just flies to Floss in Paradise and tries and shoots a bunch of people to try to get the stones. And they have set up a bomb. And he manages to stop. The bomb manages to stop. But then one of the Mangalorians blows him up with a different bomb. And thus his whole, like, other than starting a few things in motion... He was largely a pointless villain.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just they were trying to get the stones just to fuck him over. Maybe they were so pissed at him that that's the only way they could.
Yeah, I don't know. They were on some kind of quest for vengeance.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. but I don't think really needs to, given I mean, it's just they were going after the MacGuffin or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
that's, yeah,
it's
yeah.
all just yeah, whatever.
Here's and it, as much as I don't want to point out bad things in this movie, which again I really think 98% of Rotten Tomatoes. Here's a quote from Gary Oldman in this film. I know this music. Let's change the beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's nothing. Like, those aren't, I mean, I get what he's doing. Like, I guess, you know, like, guns are music to him and that sort of, but mm-hmm. like, that's, that, I mean, that's just,
well, it's,
that's
one, just, it's just one of those things. It's just, yeah, well, it's, that's my secret. I'm always angry. It's one of those things that sounds cool, but when you stop and think about it, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And just the way, so this movie kind of treats those Mandalorians like stormtroopers, and then and that there's this just this casual wacky execution of one, and it's not treated like you just murdered something. When Corbin Dallas has Ruby Rod hold the gun at the thing's head,
oh yeah, yeah,
and he inadvertently blows it up. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, oh, I just murdered you.
He's like, oh my god, oh my bad, oh, I hope you're gonna be okay. Yeah, yeah, he's great. Okay, so before that, because we're gonna get that fight scene, I have a whole note here, but directly written in my notes, the stones are inner. Let's take a moment to realize how wild it is, and that seems normal in this movie. That's how bonkers this fucking movie is. Mm-hmm. The stones are in the lady.
Yeah.
And it doesn't... Did it even occur to you that that's weird? Like,
yeah, it,
because
no,
this movie's so fucking
yeah,
bananas.
But I guess we're just approaching it from two different things. The, yes, I thought it was weird, but for me, I was, of course the stones are in it. Yeah, why wouldn't they be? I'm so irritated that it just it doesn't matter what you do anymore. Like, I'm so... This whole movie is a cross between a stand-up comedian who after every joke goes, huh? Yeah? Huh? Yeah. And a magician who after every trick is like, what? It just, you know, ta-da, in this really annoying way. And I'm just beaten down by all of it. So by the time you're at that point, we're like, isn't this weird? These stones are inside this person. Sure.
I think I'm going to explain that in my next note here. One of the weirdest action scenes ever. He seesaw jumps the pig alien to smash its head into the ceiling. And then it just starts firing randomly and killing everything.
Well, it didn't mean to, but Ruby Rod slapped his head.
Yeah.
So that's why that happened.
This is everything Hudson Hawk wanted to be. And I think I just explained the film to you.
I've never seen Hudson Hawk.
Well, no, I know what's happening later in this. No. You have to stop saying things like that on this show because it just gives me something else to
write on
the
list. I do know people that genuinely enjoy that movie.
I do enjoy that movie, but very much the same way I enjoy Fifth Element.
It's too cartoony. Like that kind of thing. Again, if it was in a cartoon, yeah, sure, I'd probably be fine with it. But because it doesn't.
Well, that fight scene where the alien gets seesawed into the ceiling and shoots everybody has the most cartoonish music stings. Because
that's
pling, pling, pling.
Well, that's
pling,
my
pling,
that's my whole thing music. With this movie. So the same thing, like I said, when they find the gun and they're trying to press the button, the movie's like, boom, ba-doop, ba-doop, ba-doop. And then again, when Gary Oldman is about to be blown up by the bomb, it's all this dopey, cartoony crap.
It's amazing.
And it's funny because a while ago, I rewatched What About Bob?
Yeah.
And it made me kind of miss. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember when movies had incidental music. Like you basically heard the theme of What About Bob several times in the movie, but just as like Bob's walking somewhere. And it's like, boop, ba-doop, here's the theme from the thing, kind of an incidental version of it. You know, like they would on the Brady Bunch show or something like that. And this movie made me hate music in general because just everything was punctuated with just this stupid cartoony bullshit that just made it dumber. That it's already a dumb thing was happening and you just underlined it and circled it. And yeah. So Gary Oldman's blown up by a bomb. Whoop-a-doo. You expect his face to just him to get blackface and turn to the screen. Whoa, not again.
Yeah. So the last kind of odd choice or kind of amazing choice in my opinion that this movie did, and I was so much less annoyed by Ruby Rod than I thought I was going to be because I didn't remember him being irritating.
I cannot understand him. I had a hard time understanding what the hell he's saying because he's just screeching.
It would have been so much easier, and frankly would have suited this film in the way that you don't like the film that way. It would have suited it more that that was a put on.
Sure. That, yeah. No, I would totally agree.
But the fact that it made the choice that's actually his personality. Mm-hmm. It's not like a Howard Stern thing where he flips the mic off and then goes home and makes love to Allison and raises kids, you know, like in a very nice way. Like this is Howard Stern goes home and lives in a house full of lesbians and the Whack Pack lives in his basement.
No, because that would require depth of character or anything to not just be a two-dimensional
it's nonsense. So, it's so crazy that, again, just every choice that was made is
dumb.
Antithetical to the one. See, I don't. I find that a bit. Because again, if they made those choices, this would be another humdrum. Because if this was done well, and I understand why you don't like it.
Sure.
If this was done well, this movie would be just. It would just be another forgettable science fiction movie. But done this way, this is art on the weirdest level possible. This is so fucking strange.
Sure. Like
the fact that this is a almost $100 million movie back when those were so rare to make, yeah. That made $260 million, and every choice is fucking bananas. It is so weird.
Yeah, I guess the way I kind of look at this, I guess for me, so I hate the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yeah.
But I get it. I get its place as a midnight movie. I get its place as sort of, you know, sort of the history of LGBTQ plus, that kind of thing. Like, I understand the context of that movie. This doesn't have that. This is just a loud, obnoxious Hollywood movie. And I don't understand the fervor like you have for it. I don't get it. Yes, yeah. There are weird choices in this movie, but to me, it's not that subversive. It's just annoying Hollywood. It's not out of the realm. Instead of being Tango and Cash, that kind of stupid, it's just a different kind of stupid. I don't know. I'm not seeing this the subversion that you are.
See, it's not that it's subversion. It's just a sequence of choices that no other big budget movie I've ever seen make before or after. Like, it's just, it is unique in every way in that nothing is the expected outcome of the thing before it. There's nothing that if you said, hey, let's make a choice on this, no human would come up with except for Luc Besson. Like, it's so fundamentally awkward and odd in every way that I just find it just adorable. Like,
yeah, I guess I don't find that I don't find the choices that were made endearing, I guess, is what it is. I don't. And again, like, they're not, to me, they're not that oddball. Like, they're like, I understand what you're saying when, you know, some of the stuff you're outlining, but it doesn't, that all just, no, kind of fits. That still fits these archetypes of just,
but it's
like,
not that they're odd, it's that there's so many of them. Like, any other movie could have two or three of those choices and be considered odd. This movie has 68. Like, every, like, the high end of weird kind of oddball choices, I would say, is 8 in a movie. This mm-hmm. is 100. Like, it's just, it is so outside of the spectrum in the amount of it that you consider it an assault. To me, I consider it like a delight. It's like my love of Gotham, where it's just like, this is fucking insane, right, that this exists. You know?
No, and I get that. But I guess, and maybe I'm just in the context of, that I am not seeing the context, whereas I've just been beaten down by so many loud and obnoxious Hollywood movies, summer blockbusters, that this one just seems like the same.
Yeah, I get,
whereas,
yeah,
you know, maybe I'm not appreciating it for its time. But at the time, when I saw it, I was like 17. I liked Armageddon. You know what I mean? I was primed to like stupid crap and just accept whatever. And I almost walked out of this
movie.
See,
but that's the thing, is I don't think you can compare this to Armageddon, because Armageddon is a straightforward movie.
No, but I'm saying, just as far as like accepting dumb stuff,
yeah,
unquestioning whatever is happening.
But I'm
on
saying
the
this is an entirely different kind of dumb. Like, I think in a time of your life that you were into, like, if you ever got into Terrence Malick or something like,
sure,
that, I think if you're in a Terrence Malick phase, this movie would work better and be in that.
How is that even the same thing?
No, I'm not saying the same thing, but you're avant-garde, odd choice, awkward filmmaking, it would, your mindset would be closer to accepting this movie than, like, Armageddon's a well-made action movie.
Right, but I liked, I mean, I'm not going to try to defend my choice. I liked all kinds of crazy stuff. The problem I have is this movie is just so obnoxious. It's so,
yeah,
zany.
But,
and it's so, yeah, ham-fisted about its zaniness. It is so episode one humor level.
Yeah.
That there's stuff I like in there. But it's so buried under mounds of shit.
See, that's the thing, is that I don't take it as like a block. Like, I don't even put it in the same thing as Armageddon or like any given blockbuster. It's that it's more in the realm of like an experimental filmmaking. And no, it's like very Hollywoody, but it's just every weird choice that Hollywood could make put into one movie. Right, let's.
But I guess, yeah, my thing with that is Waterworld had Kevin Costner drinking his own urine, and that's a bunch of pirates that were grouped together because they like to smoke. That didn't make that movie any good. You know what I mean?
But
like,
that's one or two. That's what I'm saying, is that movie's got a weird choice quotient of like 4.
No,
this
is
literally in the hundreds.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I'm just saying that's not a draw for me. Like, yeah. I don't think the choices that were made were that interesting.
No, see, normally it wouldn't.
But again, like, because so many were made that I don't like at the beginning, by the time you're making 800 more. I don't care.
Oh, see, to me, at that point, like, not even at that point, because, like, so early on establishes itself as a movie that's not doing things the way I'm accustomed to. I'm so welcoming its odd choices in that I'm just into it. I don't like this movie for what he was trying to do. I just like the movie for what happened.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. So anyway, and here's the part that really bothered me in the movie, simply because it happens. Well, everything so much has bothered me. But this happens so late in the game. So they get the stones. They get off of Lost in Paradise. And then she looks up war and feels bad. Because she's been going through the dictionary or whatever, Wikipedia. And I guess maybe in French, atrocities, Holocaust, all that stuff happens after the word for war. Because she's encountered none of that. And then all of a sudden, mankind's not worth saving. So this whole thing that she's been built to do, all of a sudden, that's when we had to put one last little hurdle in there to just stretch this out. And so Bruce Willis, they can remember that Bruce Willis has to teach her how to love. That felt really tacked on.
Yeah, that was tacky. Not tacky. I just used your word and threw a Y at the end.
Sure.
That was not effective. But at this point, I didn't care about the end. Like, the end was, you know, after the Lost in Paradise sequence.
Right.
I did like the way that they did the lighting, the match thing.
I will say, like, I was, as much as I sit there hating this movie, I did kind of be like, oh, I hope it doesn't burn out.
Yeah,
like, they did get, like, it was, you know.
They built that part well. And yeah, it was a cheesy hero falls in love end, but
sure.
I was fine with it. It was more like a shoulder shrug. It's like far better movies have done far worse.
Yeah, but it's also like, don't try to get all highfalutin now. Don't try to give me a message now.
That's certainly not the strongest thing in the film is that little sequence, but the, them realizing how to, activate the things.
No, that was fun.
That was good. Them stopping the thing was good. And then, that last scene, the little denouement,
the James Bond ending.
That was, just the weirdest choice in the universe. It was
them banging in a tube.
How do you end with them banging in a tube?
It's how every James Bond movie ends, with like him banging the lady he finds.
Yeah.
In different ways. Like, you know, in Moonraker or whatever, this, you know, like, well, let's turn off the imaging so they can't see us.
Yeah, this is them banging in a DNA regeneration chamber while tiny Zeus Lister, the president of the Earth. Because
it's made by a horny
and
Frenchman.
And then his dumb mom called. And his mom is actually the one that's...
It's so bad.
The mom part I could really do without.
It's so bad.
That actually part strikes me as maybe Bruce Willis wrote, because that stinks of Bruce Willis's comedy.
I don't know.
You've never seen Hudson Hawk, but I assure you, if you watch that, you kind of understand where I'm coming from. Like, that's his, like, refers to his kind of humor, you know, like Jersey humor, you know?
Yeah, I just think this is weird misogynistic French crap.
It's not, that part's not very good. Yeah, that's so far, like, the movies we've watched. Oh, wait. That's pretty much the end. That last little scene doesn't really.
It's been pretty well established that I like this movie and you like this movie. We've wasted everyone's time enough.
Here's what needs to happen. For us, at some point, we need to watch a movie with a positive portrayal of either a woman or a person of color.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
But do we have to hate it?
That's fine.
I hate this portrayal.
We just don't have to hate them, right. You know, or at least just have them. That'd be more respectful to women. It's like, at least we could hate them as characters instead of just like, oh boy.
All right. So clearly,
here.
Barbed Wire is our next movie.
Oh boy, I've actually sat through that before.
Oh jeez.
Yeah. All right. So John, now that we've Well, you know, actually, before we announce what the next movie is, let me just take a moment to say, I'm sorry that your taste in movies are so terrible because that movie ruled.
Okay.
No, good job sitting through that. That must have been difficult for you.
It was not pleasant.
I hope someday we could find a film that I hate as much and I will return the favor.
It's interesting because, you know, going back to the movies that we've done, honestly, in some ways, I'm more irritated by Batman Begins, where it feels like there's a potential to be a good movie there, or Alien Resurrection was not going to happen. But this one there, I guess in those, maybe I was just more disappointed. This it's not even a bad movie. It's just irritating. So it was like you asked me to watch John Leguizamo in The Pest. Like, that's what it felt like.
Which
I'm sure is actually a terrible movie, but it's so obnoxious.
All right. So next movie that we're going to watch is the classic, I'm going to say by now, because it came out a few years ago.
Sniper, Special Ops.
Sniper, : Special Ops. I'm assuming there's a colon there.
Yeah,
there's
always a colon. Well, it's Steven Seagal.
Yeah, and professional wrestler Rob Van Dam. That's right, it's me, RVD, for all you professional wrestling fans out there.
Yeah, so get ready for me to actually enjoy this movie while having crapped on arguably probably a better film this time around.
I'm sure. And I hope that I want to spread this around because I chose this movie because I saw Seagal Van Damme and got tricked because I was thinking he was the good Van Damme, not the dumb professional
but
wrestler.
But we don't know yet.
We'll
have to see from the movie. If Rob Van Dam proves to be the good Van Dam,
sure he could be fantastic. I've never seen him act outside of a ring.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there we go. It's
what if this movie just all his scenes he's in a wrestling ring, regardless of where he is?
Oh, it'd be so good. I mean, this movie could be great. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm sure it's going to be fantastic.
It's available on Netflix for all you people that watch out there.
I'm going to wager, without having looked too much into it, I'm going to wager it's the same guy that did Perfect Weapon.
Oh, I'm sure.
Titus Parr.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So do that. You can email us. johnandalex@gmail.com.
And that's Alex with two X's.
Yeah, Alex with two X's. Or we have a website now, johnandalexhatestuff.com. Alex spelled with two X's. So johnandalexhatestuff.com, johnandalex@gmail.com. If you want to, you know, if you're like, hey, you guys should lambast this film. Or, hey, you know what you'd like is this movie and we could watch it.
Or your opinion is dumb. Lilu is great.
John, I don't think we're on a really first name basis with Lilu yet. No,
oh, I'm sorry.
I've already deleted her name. Don't worry. yeah. Okay. So next episode, we're watching Sniper. What's it? Special Ops?
Sure.
All right. See you guys then.
Bye.
Bye.